This is an interview with Mr. Harold Kennedy, Visiting Teachers Services, Coordinator, Visiting Teachers Services, Youngstown Public Schools, by Bernice Mercer for the Oral History Project for Youngstown State University on November 3rd at 10 o'clock in the morning. And Mr. Kennedy, we're interested in yourself, your family, your schooling, and so on, before you got into your lifelong service in Youngstown.
Well, I'm a Youngstown resident, went all the way through Youngstown School. I started at Sheehy Street School under Miss McGowan, who was the principal. From Sheehy, I went to Lincoln under Mr. Smith, J.W. Smith, who was over there. And then from there, I went to East High School with the same Mr. Smith. Entered East High School in the first class when the building opened in 1926, September 26th, I believe it was. Graduated from East High School in 1930. From then on, I went on through Youngstown State University, graduating in 1937. Continued on to the University of Pittsburgh, where I received my master's degree in 1939.
Now, was there something about this that steered you into your present, your lifelong facet of education?
No, really, I didn't make my mind up until I was in about my second year of college, when I became interested in some educational courses and became quite interested and turned over from my science major, I was majoring in biology at the time, to education.
Was there anything that you can remember about your school life that might have made you especially interested or feel that you had some kind of built-in expertise in the field you chose?
No, I don't think so. I had a very friendly feeling towards schools. I had come up under a very kindly school, kind of school in the administration. I can recall back in Sheehy Street School, the old custodian, for example, who in the morning when, during the winter, we'd get there early, and in those days no one had proper shoes or clothing as we have today. When we'd get there cold and wet, he'd take us into the boiler room and keep us warm and dry us off and then send us on to class. So I think it was essentially one of the, I just had a very, very happy school experience.
Your family, was your father a steel worker?
No, my father was a policeman. And they are Youngstown people on both sides of the family for many, many years. Both my father and mother. I guess it goes back to the days of the potato famine in Ireland when they landed in Youngstown.
This project has some other people from there that are even in this class. Your father being a policeman might have helped. You had a feeling about the work, perhaps.
No, I didn't know my father that well. My father died when I was 7, so I really had no concept of the police or what he was involved in. He was private police anyway. He wasn't a city policeman. He was a member of security force for the, I believe it was Republic Iron and Steel.
So, about the second year of your college, you began to think about this angle.
Yes, I took a course quite by chance, as many people do in college. I needed a course, and there was a time spot available, and some of my friends were taking it, and As a matter of fact, Dr. George Schoenhart was one of my friends at the time, and we both took the course and both found out that this was opening a new field, which we really hadn't considered before.
This teacher must have been pretty...
Well, it was Dr. Wilcox, who was the dean of the School of Education in Youngstown. Dean Wilcox in those days. And he was, maybe he was a good salesman. But he did. He turned out a lot of young teachers in Youngstown School, and now in the education business.
Yes,
indeed.
So from then on, the courses you chose?
From that day on, I went sticking with my original majors and minors. Of course, I also started to prepare to teach. I stayed with my biology major, my history major, and my English major. That's my social science one.
Social science was the angle, the specific, that got you into your visiting teacher job, I suppose.
No, as a matter of fact, I backed into the visiting teacher job. I was asked in by Mr. David Lehman, who was the head of the department, and it wasn't until years later that I found out how I was even asked. It seems that at a hearing or some kind of a meeting at the Youngstown Board of Education, there was a young lad who was having a series of difficulties in all of his schools. And as they were going over his record, it was just one of these horrible school records. This kid couldn't get along with anybody. He had been failing. He had been in trouble. He'd been bounced in and out of school and in and out of the courts. And in the interview, someone made a statement, "Well, after looking your record over, young man, I have come to one conclusion, that you were never able to get along with anybody in the school system." And the young man, whose name I never learned, says, "No, that's not true. I had one good year with one teacher, he said it was coming to school." Well, of course, naturally, they were a little bit surprised and asked, "Who was the teacher?" And he said, "Well, that was Mr. Kennedy. That was my only good school experience." And evidently, Mr. Lehman remembered that, and sometime later, when he had an opening, he, out of a clear blue sky one day, dropped in and asked me if I'd like to go to work for him. I told him I wasn't sure. I was very happy where I was teaching. But he said he needed someone, so I agreed to take it for 1 year with the understanding that if I didn't like it, I could go back to my regular classroom work.
Oh, what did you understand when you made the change that your work would be like?
Well, I really didn't know. I had no idea how detailed it was going to be. I thought it had something. Like many people, I just thought it meant just strictly attendance. Mm-hmm. And then I found out. All the attendance work was sort of the peak of the iceberg sticking out of the water. That as soon as you went into checking why Johnny didn't come to school, or why Johnny was doing this, or why Johnny was doing that, then you came up with a whole new ballgame. Just a whole myriad of facts that enter into a kid and his problems in school. And I liked it so well, I've been at it ever since.
That first year, can you remember some details about what happened that first year?
No. I can recall hundreds of people that I worked with and, of course, continue to work with, but the first year, they all blended together in one long year.
Now, these people that you worked with, were they agencies in the town?
No, I'm referring to the people, basically.
The parents of the kids?
The parents and the children I remember better than the agencies, even though we, as a visiting teacher, you do get to know the Children's Service Board, you get to know the Mahoney County Court, the Protestant and family, Jewish family worker case, the family... bureaus or services, they were called. I got to know Judge Beckenbaugh real well and made some acquaintances with some of the probation officers down through the court. Got to know, of course, a lot of school personnel that I wouldn't have known otherwise. But basically, I got to know the people, the the children and their parents on the south side of Youngstown.
South side. At that time...
I always worked the south side. As a visiting teacher, I spent approximately 25 years on the south side of Youngstown, always in the same South High area. So I watched them grow up, I watched them come through school, and I watched them get married, and I went back and visited them in their homes, and their children were having problems, all in the same area.
How many visiting teachers were there when you started?
I believe there were 6, and then in an economy move, we got cut back to 5.
I imagine that was no economy. You had no idea the first year what all you were going to be doing. Now, would you enumerate some of the things that you started doing and that you've been doing ever since?
Well, basically, as a visiting teacher, you start off in first year in September, and you work almost the first month is rounding up the lost sheep that didn't come back into school. This is your introduction. You're looking for them. They've moved. They left no trace. Others have gone on to other school systems, and you weren't notified. Now, this is the introduction. Then you basically start checking attendance of those who are there. And, of course, as soon as you start working with the attendants, then you get into the other things which are causing a youngster to be out of school. And this takes you afield then into the area of service agencies. Sometimes you get the kids help. Maybe a kid wasn't coming to school because he didn't have any shoes. Maybe he didn't have any clothing. Poverty in the home. Sometimes it also got you in the... a little bit of family counseling with the youngsters and with their parents in order to solve some of these problems. I can recall one little girl who was missing school. Over what seemed to me to be a foolish thing, but the more I thought about it, it was a real thing of the girl. She wouldn't go to school because her mother was insisting that she wear silk stockings. All the other girls were wearing bobby socks. This created quite a family row. It took me 2 or 3 days to straighten this up, to convince the mother to let the girl be the same as the other kids in class and wear bobby socks instead of the silk stockings that she was insisting on. She was, and incidentally, this was a sixth grade girl in an elementary school.
This gives people an idea. The ordinary person has no inkling of what your job really involves, because it isn't advertised. It is very little said about it. And now, as the years progressed, did you add things that you didn't do at first?
Yes, the longer you were in a field, the more people got to know you. And as you were known, you got involved in many, many disputes. You're asked to solve a lot of problems, which a stranger wouldn't have had, because the people simply had confidence in you and your ability to sit down and listen to their problem and try to understand it and come up with some decision which would help them as well as the people they might be in trouble with. The longer you worked with the agencies, the better known you became. And you just got to know your people better and better and better. When you're working with the same families year after year, you know all the in-laws and you know the relationships, you know who's marrying who, you know, all the way down the line, and it makes you much more effective in the job.
Now, your relationship with the agencies, they know you so well that when you come and say, now this family needs a certain thing, they don't go into it. They take your word for it.
Yeah, we were
go on from there.
Well, we were very fortunate, too, in those early days. There was more immediate help for the individual family who did not qualify for welfare than there is now. A pair of shoes was no problem. A coat, a winter coat, some of these things were available to us. For example, Salvation Army. I could always get shoes out of Salvation Army. I could get some shoes out of most of the welfare, not the most of the service agencies in those days had a little bit of money for emergency. Now the person who was eligible and could qualify for welfare, even in those days, they had procedures through which they could use in order to get materials. But the person who was down on their luck temporarily, who couldn't apply for welfare, this was a person I always felt very, very sorry for. They needed help, but they didn't need welfare. They only needed a handout, temporary, sometimes on a loan basis and sometimes on a gift basis.
And this isn't available now?
No, there was a reorganization, I don't know how many years ago, when the so-called community chest, I think it was called in those days, became the United Appeal, in which they took most of the welfare away from the social agencies and put all of the welfare directly with the welfare. In the overall picture, they may have helped more people, but there was a lot of other people that got sort of shortchanged on the switch. And this was a long time ago.
Something that I was going to ask you that I forgot, that's back in our chronology here. This question may seem kind of far out, but in 1918, I came across a microfilm of a vindicator that said that the flu epidemic was so severe in Youngstown, all the schools were closed. And South High was used as a hospital. Now that wouldn't have been, would you have any recollection of that?
In 1918?
Well,
see. 1918, I was going to school probably somewhere,
right.
It was a grade school.
Yeah.
You were probably in the first or second, first grade over around on Shinshi Street.
Well.
I can recall the flu days and everybody be talking about it, but I was a kid in those days.
I thought you were might have reached back in time like
nope,
I do.
Nope, I
reached back in time too. So
I can recall Mr. Lehman, my former boss, saying that there was a time during the Depression that he was in charge of giving shoes out. He gave shoe vouchers. Someone had made the schools sort of a quasi-welfare agency for school children. If there was a need, he had certain vouchers. He could issue a voucher for a parent to buy a kid a pair of shoes to enable him to go to school. Because basically, we are the only people who really knows, perhaps, a kid and whether or not he needs shoes to go to school. We're in the homes, we're checking, we're working with them. Whereas if you come into an office downtown and say you've got a kid who needs a pair of shoes and they're requesting money for the shoes or something, you really don't know whether or not they're going out and use the money for some other purpose or whether they're really telling the truth. So whoever set it up in Notre Dame felt, well, at least the school would know who needed shoes.
The matter of glasses, too.
Well, there again, we used to get our glasses through the Society for the Blind, and I believe some of that service is still available. But now the welfare people are on the ADC and the general relief. Their medical benefits have been increased. Somewhat, so they can get medical attention. I believe they can also get glasses.
I know the situation is pretty well taken care of now, in one way or another.
Yes, we don't have the problem that we used to have with children who are not getting medical attention and not getting glasses. We don't have the except sometimes in the beginning of the school year when the welfare allowances for clothing and such have not been given. Sometimes we have trouble.
Now, after the first year when you realized what a school your work was going to require. Then during the next 10 years, how did it develop? Do you remember what your working day was like?
Well,
your hours, your...
Well, several things happened. Naturally, the working day extended longer and longer because you found yourself making phone calls at night, making certain home calls at night when people needed help. Since people knew you, you received a great many calls at home asking advice and so on and so forth. Also, I found myself going back to school. I spent 5 years in Youngstown School of Law. I was working with the court, working with attorneys, and I didn't understand their language, so I thought I'd better find out what they were talking about. Then after I left there, I spent an additional 2 years doing special kind of guidance work at Westminster College over in New Wilmington.
This then was the, about what decade?
Well, this would be in the 50s.
The 50s. Mm-hmm. Now, have things changed tremendously since the 50s for your job?
Became highly, highly complex. There are more problems, or we have a lot of things on the streets today that we didn't have. More freedom, the automobile, which when I first started, it was most unusual for a young person to have an automobile. Most unusual. Now, at 16, it seems everybody gets a car. We have a degree in mobility, which is taking the kids out of their local neighborhood. Now they can roam as far as they want to go. So certain social problems. Social conflicts have come up, which caused a reaction in our schools. We had a changing population on our side of town, which created some problems and solved some others. We had an arterial highway disrupt many, many homes South High area when they built the new highways through. All of these things caused troubles in schools. New social morals, social standards, all of these things were changed. We had a generation gap, if you wish to call it, between the parents and their kids, where the kids were not listening to their parents. They were listening to people on the street somehow, or their friends rather than their parents. We saw an era where the sort of the parents and the kids were drifting apart, especially in the family discipline. And all of these things back right into the school.
Has this altered now since the 60s?
Well, I've been out of the field now. Couple of years. I'm down here in the central office, but I still have my finger on the pulse. But seemingly in the last couple of years, especially the last 2 years, I think of, there's been a sort of a general stabilization in the schools in Youngstown. We don't seem to have the violent conflicts we had. We don't have the neighborhood troubles between the schools and the certain neighborhood agencies. All of those things seem to have, they've either come to a better understanding or the problems have disappeared. I don't know.
No. You have how many visiting teachers now?
10. There are 10 visiting teachers now.
Now, has the, of course, there's another agency now, but it's called the Homeschool Business.
Yeah, that's an offshoot of our division.
It's just, I remember you meet together all the time, so that you're...
Yeah, I'm, our two staffs, we service, they service only Title I areas, you understand.
Yes.
Whereas
you serve the entire
we
city.
We serve the entire city, and they serve a limited, they have a limited caseload. they will have maybe anywhere from 20 to 25 youngsters, and they work with them on a casework basis, and they stay with them all year, all the way through. And we take the rest of the students we handle, and for certain purposes we move in and out of their caseload. For example, if one of their cases has to go to court, we take it in. They do not do court work. They're strictly a social type agency funded through state and federal funds.
So now I'd like to hear what feelings you have now about this entire project, and what you'd like to see happen. What would you like the most to see come about? Something that the school might do or the city might do that you think would help matters?
Which project are you talking about?
Your
visiting teacher. Number one, I'd like to see the schools somehow add all their curriculum to a point that school could maybe be more meaningful for a lot of kids. The kid who unmotivated, the kid who's only thinking of getting out of school, quitting and going to work. I'd like to see some programs which would keep that kid interested, keep him in school. And it's a terrific thing because, you know, look what the schools are competing with. They're competing with booze. They're competing with drugs. They're competing with all kinds of entertainment that are going on, available any place, any street corner in Youngstown. And trying to, on the other hand, keep the kids in school by offering them a standard academic program. Sometimes we lose out on our share of the kids. Basically, we do Youngstown. We have a fairly good retention rate for our youngsters. I think it's something like 80% or better for the youngsters who stay. But I'm still worried about that group that gets away from us, because they're the ones that are going to continue to be on a certain kind of a cycle, that they're going to continue to take more and more energy of everybody who's working with them, because they're, each year, they standards on the outside for work and success become higher and higher, and these, of course, these dropouts, they just don't fit into that picture, so they are, they're back on welfare, self-perpetuating again. Take a couple dropouts, they get married, but nothing, that is no job prospect, no anything, and but the only thing that they can do for a living, they can both go down and apply. Now it's a new unit, new family unit, go down and apply for welfare. And basically, without any education, there's no way to get out of that, and it's just the same old thing goes on and on and on.
What you have you taught, and successfully, and what was it then that you would like to see done? What would these forces be that the teachers might that keep from losing these kids? You must have some ideas on
it. Well, I think we've made some start with some of our job-oriented programs. Those need to be expanded. Our program at Chauffin Vocational type of thing needs to be brought down, because that starts at the 11th grade. And by the 11th grade, I've lost a lot of these kids. We need work-study programs. We need job-oriented programs. And something else we need. I think we need a change, and this applies not to all of our teachers, but I think there's something about that return to that sort of a friendly kind of atmosphere that I spoke about that I remember so fondly is a place where I'm wanted, a place that I was respected, and the place that I felt safe in being there. And sometimes, maybe, just maybe, we've lost some of that.
Do you have a feeling of why this might have happened? How is this? You mean that? Well, this was always true. This occasion that the young man. Mm-hmm. There was only the one place where he felt wanted, mm-hmm. where he felt. Now, that was true when you began all over the city. That this
well,
one
that's
type
true.
Of young man couldn't fit anywhere.
Well, I really don't know how this came about. I guess maybe just the difference of the lure of the outside. Maybe also some of the social conflicts, where we had a youngster, for one reason or other, being very antagonistic in school, that was brought on by something happening on the outside, which started to build a barrier between maybe him and his teacher. Or the school system. We had a lot of people making some wild claims about, you know, what the schools were and what they were doing. They were very critical of us, to a point where I think they turned a lot of youngsters away from school without ever having offered them any alternative.
They came into the school feeling antagonistic before.
Yeah, well, what's the use of, the old story, what's the use of getting an education? You're not going to get hired because you're such and such anyways. You're wasting your time there. This was a very prevalent thing a few years ago. I heard it many, many times.
But it is not so much now.
No, I say the last couple of years I haven't been hearing that. Now, and yet, most of the responsible leaders who have been talking and writing have been urging the young, stay in the school, stay within the system, and get your education first. Then try to change things. Don't try to change them before you have the equipment to do it.
Was Chauffin always, from the beginning, required a C average?
I couldn't tell you
required
that.
Required a certain...
Well, number one, there's a mistaken concept about vocational education. The old saying that he can't work with his head, but he can work with his hands isn't necessarily true. And a long time ago, the people in the vocational education came up with the realization that the brighter the individual they had, the better graduate they turned out in the field of vocational education. True, certain types of occupations perhaps didn't require the skill that the brain surgeon did. But the smarter the young, the more intelligent, he would see opportunity in a field which the average youngster might not see. He would be able to apply it from his own imagination, shortcuts and new techniques. For example, some of the trade craft unions, they're not interested in anyone who doesn't have normal or above intelligence. Because they find out the shop work end up, the math work, that type of thing, if the youngster can't do that, he just cannot function on the job. A carpenter who has the Fiat to be figuring stresses and strains and spans on joists and beams and all of that stuff, if he does not have a good technical background, if he can't go back to the books on estimating costs and materials and needs and being up on new projects, he's going to be lost. He's going to go bankrupt. Now, he might be able to function under somebody who does all these things for him, but if he ever intends to come to the top in his field, he never can without that good technical background.
I'm interested in these We've gone a little too fast to think over this earlier part. You said that, as you remembered your school life, it was a friendly thing.
Very friendly. I remember it with a warm glow that I think of my school.
And you mentioned Mr. Smith, and I'm interested in him because he's been mentioned a good many times.
Oh, J.W. J.W. Smith.
He must have had an immense impact.
Well, he was. He was a former, I guess he had played professional baseball at one time. He had another habit most people didn't know. He was a tobacco chewer. And he just was a wonderful kind of guy that everybody just loved him. That was all. The office wasn't a place that you lived in fear of being sent to because you were going with a... He was a stern person. He could be stern, too. But he did it in such a nice way that you didn't realize it was happening to you. And some of the... I don't remember, too. I don't remember all of my teachers, but... remember a few of them. You know, strangely enough, and you only remember the tough ones. You never remember the easy teachers. This is very true today. When youngsters come in and ask me, whatever happened to so-and-so teacher, they always ask about the teacher that made them toe the line.
So, discipline is really the key to a great deal.
It's the thing that kids respect. Of course, the tough part is the technique of the teacher who can be tough and still be kind. And compassion and understanding, but make the kids toe the line at least as far as academic excellence to the best of their ability. And this is the trick, and not all people have that.
Well, the progress of the city and the way it survived the 60s. Do you feel that there was a reason why, perhaps, that Youngstown got along through the 60s where other cities went into serious troubles?
Well, number one, I think maybe the size of the town. That might have had something to do with it. And second, we had something, too, maybe that some of the... best, we had a stable population. We did not have a great turnover in our population. And, for example, many of the families I worked with on the South Side, their parents and grandparents had even gone to South High School. We had a relatively, it was quite stable. We didn't have hordes of people moving in here from other places. We had a few, but nothing like the big cities did. And we never got so big that... we weren't able to keep more or less open lines of communication all the way down, up and down the channel.
So, also I want to bring in a little more about the work that Mr. Lehman did and the effects that the college had on your work. As you remember.
Well, of course, Mr. Lehman was perhaps one of... he is one man who worked in the school system for probably 40 years or better. He retired, well, I think he was over 71 when he retired. I've never heard anyone say an unkind word about Mr. Lehman. Never. He was a very compassionate, understanding kind of a man who... probably went to work in the school system back in about the 20s when the state attendance law went into effect, and sort of grew up with it. And as the supervisor of child accounting, he had to do naturally with many of those things which school boundaries, school boundary line, school discipline, school assignments, handling of school discipline problems and all that type of thing. And he just had a natural knack for the way. Everybody liked it. And yet he could be he had that same characteristic, a lot of people did. He could be very, very firm when he had to be, but he never did it in a very officious way. Always friendly, understanding, but he ended up getting his point across just as easily as some of the death stumpers.
He taught the very first college course that I took. I'll never forget him in that respect, because he was getting across in that capacity also.
So Youngstown had two colleges here for a long time. A lot of people, you would remember, but a lot of people didn't. Don't forget, the University of Pittsburgh was here for years and years. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were here. They had an extension course in the old second floor of the President Administration Building. They were here for years. The professors came up on the P&LE Railroad, and it was strictly night school, and I don't know how many hundreds of Youngstown teachers in that area got work on their graduate work through the University of Pittsburgh. I know Mr. Lehman was in those classes, and so was I.
That's important.
Yeah, Dr. Schoenhart was here. I remember Mr. Yeager, Professor Yeager from Pitt, a few others. I mean, I don't know why I remember. Yeager wrote a lot of textbooks for me. That's why I remembered his name better. But quite a few of them are here.
Those would be master's courses.
They were all master's.
Graduate courses.
All graduate courses. And then
in
you,
education or other things?
Well, basically they were education courses. They were here because of the need at that time. Youngstown, you remember, was started back in 1916 or 1917. Started off as a small YMCA college and later on became Youngstown College. Didn't give graduate courses. So anybody who wanted to graduate had to go to Kent, was up there, and that was just getting started. I think in those days a lot of people turned their nose down at Kent too. So you really didn't have too much choice. You either had to go to Akron or Cleveland or Pittsburgh in order to get work. So Pitt used to come in here. Then others, a great many of us, would pile into the train early Saturday mornings and get down, take a day on the campus down there, take Saturday work, and come back, or else you'd form a carpool and drive. And others, then, of course, we would get down there during the summer and get our residency. Some people even drove back and forth all summer long. Others of us stayed there. I know I happened to stay there for summer and enjoyed it very much. Pitt was a beautiful place to go to school for that new building. The Cathedral of Learning was there, and it was just conducive to going to school there. Beautiful place.
I'm glad we got into this, and I'd like to go a little more with us too. The law courses that you got into, how were they tailored more or less to your needs?
Well, that was general law, but you see, you don't specialize in law until you get up quite a ways along. But it was the basic beauty of law, of course, is the training and thinking and logic it gives you. The ability to look at certain problems in a certain way. And it's been very helpful to me, because now the schools are very, very legalistic. Very legalistic. We're under so many rules and regulations from the federal government and the state. The various agencies like the health, education, welfare, the students' rights laws and all those. If you don't understand law today, you better not be in a school business. As a matter of fact, most school systems are now starting to hire a full-time attorney just to advise the personnel on what kind of procedures, which things you could do in the old days, now you're doing, you end up with a lawsuit. We've had lawsuits on anything you can imagine in the last couple of years, the Youngstown School System.
That's only been the recent?
Yeah, I'd say the last 10 years.
Well, the last 10.
Yes.
But see, but always there was a, you do need a law on our business. For example, we are, one of the functions of the Visiting Teacher Service, we're a law enforcement agency. And as such, you have to know the laws you're enforcing. We enforce child labor laws. All work certificates are issued out of our office.
Now we can go ahead. As you look back, was there a visiting teacher when you were
in school? Chronologist.
And what were they like, as you recall?
Being a good kid, I never met any of them. I only heard about them. However, we had an old ledger laying around here that went back to 1890-something, which was the recordings of a truant officer, and showing the schools he had visited, the homes he had visited, his court cases. And so even before our compulsory education law, there must have been some kind of law, or he wouldn't have had any authority, but they were from the court. They did not work out of the school. This was all a part of a court enforcement procedure. And it wasn't until after the present attendance law, the so-called, I think it's called the Bing Law, in about 1920, when we have the compulsory attendance law as we know it today, where all youngsters between the ages of 6 and 18 must attend school.
Is it 6 still?
Between the ages of 6 and 18. Now, education in Ohio, of course, is free till they're 21. A youngster may attend school free of charge until his 21st birthday in public school. For this year, for the first time, kindergarten is mandatory for schools. All school systems in Ohio have to put in kindergarten starting 75, which is this school year. So back in the old days, the court people, I know were working, but I didn't know what the law was. I've never done any research on that.
That record, very valuable.
Yeah, well, the old records show that this man had attended. I remember the one page where he had been before Judge Somebody's Court, and some girl had been sent to Girls Industrial School. Of course, he didn't state anything in his ledger why. This was just his own accounting of where he had been. This was his timesheets.
That would be an interesting thing to know about. How do you feel about the present attendance law? Do you think it's
I think it's basically good because if we didn't have it, what would the alternative be? There's been a lot of agitation to do away with it, to only fill our schools up with those who wanted to go. And I think that's a utopian ideal, that maybe if the kids who are not good learners, the kids who are not disciplined, if they would just go away, we probably could do a very, very fine job at school with the few we had left. But what's going on outside, though? What's happening to the bulk of our kids who, especially in a secondary school, wouldn't be showing up? I think most of the elementary kids would go anyways. Most elementary kids seem to like school. It's only after they hit junior high that they start to look around and see there's some other things in the world besides school. I think that might cause some of our problems.
The details of the law affect your job, and I'm not sure that most people know. They must be in school. That is for a certain number of days a year.
They must be in school during the period of time in which school is in session. Now, the law does allow them to be off sick under certain stringent requirements. Anything else from that is one or two things. It's either parental neglect or truancy.
And there is not very much absenteeism in the grade school.
There's a lot of sickness. Let's say there is absenteeism in the grade schools, but basically there's not much truancy in the grade schools, I will say that. There's some more parental neglect or illness than there is truancy. Illness is a great thing in the elementary, because this is the period which you got your chicken, measles and chicken pox and all these other things, which fortunately we've eradicated a lot of them with our shot policies and things, or immunization. But they still get some of these childhood diseases, and these, they can run up quite a few days.
That's true.
Did you remember the old measles signs and the chicken pox signs and the scarlet fever signs and the quarantine signs on the houses? Well, you just don't see these anymore. Furthermore, even a lot of the medical, the exclusions are a lot different than they used to be. They found out that incubation periods, for example, are different than they used to think they were. And if a youngster doesn't come down with a disease, very shortly, while he's safe to come in school, we found out that there are other diseases where we used to put the whole families out, only the person affected with it.
I remember that very well.
You couldn't even go to the store. Remember?
It was a crisis.
Remember, as a boy, having food handed in the window to our house while somebody had the measles, because no one was allowed even out of the house to go to the store.
That's
a long time ago.
The purpose of our interview, of course, was to get back into the feelings that people had about things and the times that you remember first. And I wonder if there's something that you'd like to add that we haven't touched on so far.
Well, I think schools have come under the general feeling of the public a little bit, and the general distrust of everything. Nobody believes anybody anymore. It happened long before Watergate. The feeling that all politicians lie and that type of thing. And I think maybe that it kept working down and working down and working down to maybe a lot of people think that the schools is part of the system is really not what it says it is. And by that we may have lost some of the loyalty that we had in the old days. Though certain organizations like the PTAs and things who are in and out of the schools and understand them, they are still our staunch backers and they know what's going on. If you've heard some of the talk on this levy renewal, you hear some of the wild rumors that they go around, that everybody thinks we've got a huge pile of cash stored in the back room somewhere, that anytime we need it, we can run back there and get it, that type of thing. So that probably is hurting us. There's also a lack of disrespect today that has come about, that used to be the teacher and the preacher were two sacred persons. Right? Nobody ever questioned their rights. Nobody ever questioned anything they did. And as part of that backlash and that general feeling that anything to do with an institution is not necessarily right, I think that also has hurt us a bit. So, I think that is one of the reasons today that we have so much trouble maybe convincing people that we're still doing a good job. We can't be doing too badly. If we can take and put a man on the moon as we did, it surely took an awful lot of well-trained people to do some of these things that we do. Maybe we haven't solved some of the social problems, but the technical problems of which required a very high degree of skill. Somebody taught those people. Take the city of Youngstown. It's running very smoothly. Being run by a group or groups of well-educated, intelligent people, or somebody. Often, you know, I'll see a letter to the editor, a very well-written letter by someone condemning the educational system. Well, if the dumb bunny hadn't received a good education, he wouldn't have been able to write the letter. I think maybe if people would really take a look at what they got in the way of an education, that they might think a little bit differently.
There are people that are doing the complaining.
Yeah, we gave them the tools to do the complaining, and even encouraged them, perhaps, to have self-expression. And, you know, the school business is funny. I always said this. It's the only profession in the world where all the experts are on the outside of the field, and none on the inside. Any bum on the street corner always knows more about running a school system than the superintendent's kids, or the teachers.
Mr. Kennedy, we are very appreciative of your time and effort in helping us with this project. In addition to our original interview, we want to cover the ground of how many different services this agency covers. There is the matter of the free lunch project. Mr. Kennedy, will you go into this?
Well, probably a little better than one out of every three youngsters in the Youngstown school system receives a free lunch. Now, the paperwork on that alone, and we approve around 8,000 youngsters, between 7,000 and 8,000 youngsters. And just the paperwork of getting those applications down here and approved and back to the schools and filed, because it's state money and it all has to be accounted for, is a tremendous work. We also do the annual enumeration. We count all the kids and make the state reports on that. We issue all the working certificates. For the youngsters who are in school, the part-time, for the summer vacation certificates, and all those who are leaving school. And, of course, we check the children's rights to attend school in Youngstown. Are they Youngstown residents? If they're not, we will help the families process the legal requirements of custody in that matter. We make investigations as to the age of the kids to make certain they fall within the legal requirements. We work with the juvenile police, we work with all the agencies, we take cases to court involving youngsters who are breaking our state attendance laws, we take parents to court who are not sending their kids to school, we make investigations, try to collect vandalism where the youngsters have done damage to our schools, broken windows and that type of thing. This office recently participated with the prosecutor in suing a family and collecting a judgment against the family for setting fire to one of our schools. We also, in the high schools and in the junior highs where we have regular attendance offices, we issue all the bus passes. We make a determination of who rides and who doesn't, depending on the distance from the school. We study the school boundary lines. We are the ones that draw up, decide which areas belong in which schools and any changes are made, it is this office which makes that change after, naturally, everything after the superintendent of school directs us to it. I personally, along with others and teachers, we hold hearings, Board of Education hearings on all youngsters who have run afoul of the school regulations, the school attendance law, and this is the last step before going into court, and we turn back probably 75% of them. In other words, this is the end of the line. The kids come in here, and we have a talk with them and their parents. We have a mutual understanding, and they go back to school or they're misbehaving. When this is the last of it, the other maybe 25%, if they continue, it may be that the facts come up, it's an agency referral, it's something else that has entirely nothing to do with what we thought it did in the first place. In that case, we would make other kind of referrals, or in continued violations, we would send it on to court. We investigate all non-resident students, and we do collect quite a few tuition for the city of Youngstown for people who don't belong in Youngstown attending school here. We also check to make certain that everybody who should be in a certain school is in there, and they're not just living at a phony address or something of that nature. We hold any parent who has a school complaint and can come into this office and get a fair listening to, and any adjustment we can make with them or the school, we will do.
And
that's a big job. That telephone isn't ringing today because I cut it off, but that's a big job. We make the investigation and work with the young ladies in case of pregnancy, where we have a night school program for them that they can, for the months in which they're incapable of attending school, and then this is free, incidentally. For a free service, or night school is free to them, then they come back into our regular school program. That's another one of the functions of this office. And then if they wish, due to family matters, to stay in night school and get a night high school diploma, they can do that free of charge. And we naturally cooperate. This office handles all parochial transfers back and forth between the parochial and the public schools. The transfer policy for a youngster can, for example, our open transfer policy to achieve racial balance, that's handled by this office. And the other regular transfer policy, as we call it, which is for where working parents wish to have their child go to school other than the district because they're not home and somebody else can take care of them in another neighborhood. The medical transfers or educational benefits transfers, subject they can't get in their own school, court placements and that nature, and that all gets through this office. And of course, we keep the census, we count the noses, and we keep a card on every youngster in the Youngstown school system, which is updated every year. We furnish materials to people, for example, who are retiring and have no proof of age, we will give them a statement as to
from the school record.
From the old school records, we furnish. We're a clearinghouse for outside agencies that want information about Youngstown people. For example, the parole authorities and that person who applied for parole, and they are running a probation check. Those come into this office for clearing and making certain we have the proper release of information form signed by the individual so we can give this record out. And that all of these things take time.
Would you say that 50% of this type of responsibility was yours when you first started? Was the belonged to the visiting teacher when you first began work?
No, when I first started, we had no free lunch program alone.
That alone.
We had no transfer policy.
so that not even, it would probably have been a fourth of what it is.
Now, if you're talking about the chair in which I'm occupation or the visiting teacher in the field, now the visiting teacher in the field, his job is quite a lot different than mine, though I direct him. But the on this particular job, I would say over half of it is new, things which we did not do when we first started, or it was not the time-consuming thing that it is now. Now, free lunches, oh man, that lunch program for the...
I went down there and looked at rather recently.
Writing up, we help write up the program, get the blanks printed, distribute the blanks to all the schools, and then when they come in here, I sometimes work 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning at home every night, because every lunch application comes in here, if it's filled out correctly, it is ready to usually go out the next day. Simply because I take them home and we use a tear-off sheet application, and once that application is approved, and if they'll put the name of their kids on or the name of the school, which they don't always do. Now, of course, that means special hand. That's what bogs it down. But an application coming in correctly filled out, it goes back up and it's done.
I remember something.
And that's a good month's work. That takes September right there.
So I'm glad that we took the time to detail the work of this office, because I think that was necessary too.